Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back to today's Daf, Be'ya Lamed Ches. We begin seven lines from the top of the Amud. Says the Gemara, Omar Shmuel, Sher Shel Patom, an ox belonging to an animal fattener, an animal breeder. Now that animal is intended for whomever will show up on Yom Tov and purchase it. Harehu kiragli kol adam. Which tchum is that shoyer bound by? Anybody who comes along and purchases that shoyer. Because this fellow, the patam, had everybody in mind. So although we learned yesterday that one's animal assumes his own personal tchum, typically, a person can walk 2,000 amma in either direction on Shabbos or Yom Tov, unless he has an Erev Tchumen, which allows him to extend his boundary in one direction over the other. For instance, if he placed an Erev 2,000 amma from the city going north, that becomes his Mokim Shvisa, his place of residence, which allows him to walk 2,000 amma in either direction from that Erev. Now the shor belonging to the patam typically would assume the tchum, the boundary of its owner. But since he has a wide customer base who he intends to send his, to sell his animals to, initially that's what he had in mind. I'm not committing these animals to my tchum, rather I'm allowing them to assume the boundary of its customer, the boundary of the fellow who will come along on Yom Tov and purchase this animal. Now, even though this customer happens to hail from a different city, it doesn't matter. The animal will assume that person's tchum. It's as though it's a pending ownership. The animal is awaiting acquisition by that specific owner and assumes the tchum of that owner. Now the Mefarshim ask, Shmuel himself yesterday tells us, Ein Breira. We can't say, well, now, on Yom Tov, it has been determined this was my portion all along and it assumed my tchum during Ben HaShemashis. We don't say that. We don't know if this was meant for you. We don't say Breira. So why is it when it comes to the Sher Shel Patam, the Sher assumes the tchum of the customer, of the fellow who came along today and purchased it? Some persons say a Sher Shel Patam is so different because it's a pending ownership. The fellow who raises these animals allows it to remain hovering, so to speak, and await and wait for the owner to come, to the customer to come, and it will assume that tchum. So it's like a hefker, it's like an ownerless object, which is awaiting acquisition. And therefore, even Shmuel would agree in this case, even without the concept of brera. Brera means it was a joint entity, has to be divided. Let's assume each fellow received his respective portion destined for him initially. That's Brera, that's a Chiddush. Who says we can say that? Who says it was meant for you? But in this case, where it was sort of ownerless, it was almost like Hefker. So now, it's pending. It's awaiting acquisition. And this fellow comes along in Yom Tov and purchases this shor, it was meant for him. And therefore, it assumes his tchum. So again, Amar Shmuel, shor shapatom, Harayu karagli kol adam. It assumes the tchum of anybody who purchases it, even if it's from a different city. Shal sharoye, however, a shor belonging to the local shepherd, this town's, this community's shepherd, who sometimes will sell an animal or two to his local customers. Harayu karagli oiso ha'ir. The animal will assume the tchum of the community member coming from this city. Rashi explains, he doesn't have such a wide customer base. He's not expecting strangers to come along and purchase his animals. It's meant for the local community, for local customers, and therefore, if one of the local members purchases his animal, the animal assumes his personal tchum, but that's it. This doesn't apply to somebody coming from a different town. Let's go down to Rashi at the wide lines. So it's the line right above the wide lines. Sher Shel Patam. Shemefatim shvarim limkar. He fattens, he feeds animals in anticipation of selling them. Hareyu karagli kol adam afilu benir acheres shabala kanal de'irav. Even if a fellow from another town comes along and arrives in town on Yom Tov by way of the Erev that he established to allow him to arrive at this city, he can purchase the animal, take it all the way back to his town, which is really out of bounds as far as the members of this town are concerned. But he can take the animal to where he can go. The kivin to urchel is buni, because since it's the derech, it's customary for this patam to sell his animals to whoever happens to show up. Me esmol ukme birshusei, demand asil macher v'zavenle. The thinking is that starting from yesterday, coming into Yom Tov, this is what he had in mind. I'm allowing anybody to come purchase it, and I'm allowing the animal to assume the tchum of that purchaser. This is by the Shoshal Patam, who has a wide customer base. He has an international clientele. But the Shoshal Roya, the Roya is a local fellow, Adam Shemagal Behema Shaloy, Obamim Shemoychem Mehen Lashchenev Makirov, he's a small time merchant. Sometimes he'll sell one or two to his friends, his neighbors. So then the animal will assume the tchum of its purchaser, but provided he's a local fellow. So the chiddush is that even though the shepherd himself presented an erev for himself, which allowed him to walk 4,000 in one direction, he can't hold back his customer from taking the animal to the other side of the city. So this animal assumes the city's territory. Because from before Yom Tov, he had allowed it to relate to the Rishus, to the possession, to the boundary, to the territory of the local fellows of the city. Because they're accustomed to purchasing from him. But it can't relate to the tchum of people coming from other cities. He doesn't have this international fame like the animal merchant we mentioned earlier, like the Patom fellow, who's well known in the entire area, who has customers coming from all over. This fellow is a local fellow, and therefore his animals are limited and must remain within the city's territory. It's mashim from Rashi that it must remain within the standard city's territory, which is 2,000 in the other direction. Okay, so Shmuel tells us two halachos. Very similar. When it's a shur slated for sale to a large crowd, then it assumes the tchum of anybody that comes to purchase that animal. As opposed to a small-time merchant, a roya, it follows the tchum of that city. And the chiddush is that even if he himself made his own erev to allow him 4,000 amah in one direction, his animal is not bound by that erev. He sells it to somebody local, that fellow can take it throughout the tchum of the city, which is 2,000 amah in either direction. Continues the Gemara. Hashoyel kli mechaver me'erev Yom Tov. Somebody borrows a kli from his friend before Yom Tov. Whose tchum is that kli going to attach to? It's bound by the tchum of the borrower, because it's serving him, it's in his possession, and it assumes his tchum. Pshita, of course. Well, if he assumed responsibility for the kli, of course, it's bound by his tchum. If this happened before Yom Tov, then coming into Yom Tov, his tchum became attached to this item. Apparently, we're speaking that although he asked to borrow it before Yom Tov, but actual delivery only took place on Yom Tov. That's the chiddush. That since I asked for it before Yom Tov, the kli assumes my tchum, even though I only actually received it on Yom Tov. Mal d'tema, perhaps I would think, la bersusei ukmi, the owner hadn't really placed it in my possession, because I hadn't actually gotten it until Yom Tov. So let's assume the Kli is bound by the Tchum of its owner, not the borrower. K'mashma, the Chiddush is no. Since he knows it's going to end up by the borrower, he plans on giving it to him. It's meant to service him on Yom Tov. It assumes the boundary of the Shoyel, of the borrower. This is the right Rabbi Yochanan, Dom Rabbi Yochanan, Shoyel Kli Mechaver Merv Yom Tov. If Reuven borrows a Kli from his friend, from Shimon, before Yom Tov, Afal Pisha Lei Nosnoi Lei Ela B'Yom Tov, although, in actuality, it was only delivered to him on Yom Tov, Harihu Keragli HaShoyel, it assumes the tchum of the borrower, even though he did not have physical possession until Yom Tov, but since coming into Yom Tov it was slated for delivery to this fellow, it was meant to be used by this fellow on Yom Tov, it assumes the tchum, the boundary of the borrower. The Mishnah continued, B'Yom Tov Keragli HaMashal. However, if he only borrowed it on Yom Tov, it's too late. Which tchum is this kli bound by? The boundary of its owner, Pshita, of course. If I only got it on Yom Tov, then why would it get my tchum? Tchum is established by Bein HaShemashes, of course. At which point it was sitting in the hands of its owner, not my hands. So it's the chiddush of the Mishnah that it remains in the tchum of its owner. Leitzricha, apparently we're speaking about the following case. Deragel v'shoyel minei. Reuven is accustomed to borrowing this kli from Shimon. Every Yom Tov he comes and borrows a knife. So perhaps I would say, well, it was meant for him. Perhaps I would think that the owner already knows it's going to end up in Reuven's hands. And he allowed it to assume the tchum of Reuven. The chiddush is, no. Because he's thinking to himself, you know what, maybe this Yom Tov is different. Perhaps Reuven will find another fellow to borrow from. V'azal v'shoyel minei, he'll borrow from him. So, the fact that he didn't come to me, Erev Yom Tov, perhaps is an indication that he found another fellow to lend him the kli, and therefore, I did not place it into his rishus. I did not have das that this kli should assume the tchum of the borrower. So again, the Mishnah speaks about a case where he borrowed it on Yom Tov. We say the kli is bound by the tchum of the owner, although he's accustomed to borrowing from him every Yom Tov. That doesn't necessarily commit the kli to the borrower's tchum. The Mishnah continues, if Rachel borrows from Leah some ingredients for her dish, for her dough, Mishnah spoke about tavlin, seasoning, umayim, water, umelach, or salt. Rashi says the tavlin was for the kedera, for a dish. Umayim umelach was for the isa, for the dough. What does Mishnah say? This joint entity, this dish, this dough is bound by the tchum of both Nashim, Rachel and Leah. Because we have elements within this dough that belong to Rachel. It was her flour. And it belongs to Leah as well. It was her salt and water. So this Isa, this dough, must remain in an area which can be commonly accessed by both Nashim, Rachel and Leah equally. Rachel can't take it to her tchum, nor can Leah take it to her tchum, because it has ingredients owned by both individuals. Asks the Gemara Kasha. We'll get to that in a minute. Ki solak Rabbi Abba. When Rabbi Abba came to Eretz Yisrael, Omar, he said, Yehi Rava, it should be the Rosan of Hashem, that my ascent to Eretz Yisrael should be successful. De'ima milsa, I should be zeicha to say words of Torah to the skabel, that it should be well received by the people in Eretz Yisrael. Kisalak, when he climbed, when he arrived in Eretz Yisrael, Ashkechel Rabbi Yechanan, he encountered the following group of Chachamim having a discussion and discussing our mission. Ashkechel Rabbi Yechanan, Rabbi Chanin, Rabbi Papi, Rabbi Zera, Rabbi Amalei, some say it was other people, Rabbi Avo, Rabbi Shimon Pazi, Rabbi Sagnavch. So he met this group of Chachamim, V'yasvi Ka'amri, and they were sitting and challenging, asking on the Mishnah. Mishnah says, we have a dough containing ingredients from Rachel, ingredients belonging to Leah. This dough is now bound by both territories, both Tchumen. Amai, why do we say that? v'livtil mayim u'melech l'gabi isa. Look, we have a dough. Who's the owner of the dough? Rachel. She made the dough. So the dough is attributed to Rachel. Although there are some ingredients in there that were taken from Leah and that were present in Leah's possession during Ben Hashemashes and assumed the boundary of Leah. But once it's been incorporated into Rachel's dough, it's considered Rachel's. She's the Baal of that dough. So why does she have to reckon with the Mayim and the Melach that she borrowed from Leah? It should be bottled to the Issa. And Tosis explains, this isn't necessarily the common concept of Bittel. Here it's more than that. When it comes to Tchumen, we look at ownership. We look at who is the Baal of this entity? Who is it serving? Now, although we have some ingredients within this dough that belong to Leah, or that were taken from Leah during Yom Tov, but it's a dough, it's a bread. The bread is owned by Rachel. We look at the entirety of this entity. We don't look at the sum total of the individual ingredients contained in this dough and this bread. Tchumen, Shvisa, relates to the entity. The entity belongs to Rachel. Whose bread is it? It's Rachel's bread. Yeah, the water, the salt within it belongs to Leah, or was taken from Leah. But the bread, as a bread, belongs to Rachel. So it should be bound by Rachel's tchum. We could ignore Leah. Amai, what's the problem? Will a bottle, maim or melech gabi isa, the water and salt, should be bottled to the dough. The bread belongs to Rachel, and it assumes her tchum. That was the kasha presented by these chachamim. And Rabbi Abba, who is a newcomer, overheard this kasha. And he wanted to respond and give a teretz. Amalu Rabbi Abba, how could you suggest that Leah's ingredients should be bottled to Rachel's bread? It's not a question of something which is usher that's bottled to something which is heter. He's speaking about monetary ownership. It belongs to Leah. When it comes to ownership, when it comes to financial interest, Bittul can apply? Of course not. Listen to this. Harishon is Arev loy kav chitin. Suppose Reuven's kav, measure of chitin, got mixed into Vasora kabin chitin shachaveir, to 10 kabin of his friend's wheat. So Reuven's kav got mixed into Shimon's 10. Yechel alav achadi? Can you entertain? Can you even think to say that Shimon can now eat the entire supply of 11 kav? Reuven is his bottle, doesn't owe him a penny. He'll eat it v'chadi, with full of glee. Oh, he just got another kav for free? Of course not. It belongs to Reuven. It doesn't become bottle as per ownership. Says Rashi on top, v'chadi v'yismach. He'll have the extra kav happily. V'yismach b'davar shloi omoboy. Here he got a free kav without any toil, without any effort. Of course not. Kachzu, the same thing by the dough. Ein shma batal mikan. Leah's ingredients don't become hefker, don't become batal to Rachel. She doesn't lose her ownership. Hoyel v'kona amayim shvisa etzla. Since the mayim went Leah's possession during Ben Hashemashes and was koinish shvisa then, how could she give that up? How could you have her lose that ownership? Now, Dolei Kashilan, there was never a Kasha Meshum she lost in law. The fact that she gave it away to Rachel, it's like borrowing, like gifting, and it assumes the tchum of the recipient. That wasn't the kasha. The Amar b'yomtev hariyuk haragla mashal. Because a minute ago we said that if you only receive it on yomtev, it assumes the tchum of the owner, the one who lent it. The basa ben hashmasha says linim, because ben hashmasha determines the tchum. In this case, when she only received it on yomtev, of course, that concept wouldn't apply because during Ben Hashemashes it was still in the hands and the possessions of Leah. So that wasn't a question that the fact that I borrowed it, it should assume my tchum because I only borrowed it on Yom Tov, too late. What then was the kasha? Because of Bittul. Look at the totality of this entity. Most of it is Rachel's. Amir is Leah. A little salt, a little water. That should be bottled to Rachel's. What do you mean? Balas. Ownership. Financial interest is not bottle. Now, Tosis makes an interesting point. Tosis says that the truth is, we're speaking about tchumen, which is really iser v'heter related. You are limited, you are bound, you are restricted to certain tchumen. So l'chayra, bittul can apply, just as it applies to all types of isurim v'heter. So Tosis answers, you're right. It does express itself in iser tchumen, but it's based on ownership. Iser tchumen is different than other types of isurim. The concept of a tchum limitation is based on ownership. It's limited, it's bound by the tchum of its owner. So over here, you can't just focus on the iser aspect. If the iser is rooted in ownership, well, if ownership can't be bottled, then by extension, the iser tchumen will be intact as well. You can't just nullify it. So that was his response. What do you mean to ask? Bittul? Why did the Mishnah say you have to reckon with Leah's ingredients? Bittul. Bittul works by Isser. Here it's ownership. It's Balus that creates the Isser Tchumen. Balus is never Batul. Ownership is not nullified. Achichu Ole, says the Gemara. So they began laughing at him. They didn't like his analogy. From the Chitim with the Kav. Amaluhi responded, you're laughing at me. Gulsaychu Shakli. I'm going to take away your chush of looking robe. You're not deserving of that robe. Hadrachichole. They laughed even further. Omar Vaishia. You know what? Shaper of it. It's actually correct. Dachichole. They laughed at him. Meaning, they had good reason to question his analogy. Why? If you take a close look at his own wording, this analogy of the kav that got mixed in 10, the wording itself seems questionable. Why? Why did he pick an example of chitim getting mixed into chitim, which is the same kind, min b'mina, rather than speaking about one type mixing into another type, chitim into se'er? Why not? Why did he stick to the same type? Ma'ishno chitim b'se'er in the loika amar lehu? Why didn't he present a case of chitim getting mixed into se'er to prove his point? Because in that case, of course, it's batal. Da'havale min b'she'en emina. Because it's one type getting mixed into another type. Umin b'she'eni min a bottle. Even he would agree that if Ruvain's chitim gets mixed into Shimon's so'irim, it's min b'she'eni min, it's one type into a different type, creates that contrast, and one overrides the other into mevatlet. And he would lose his ownership. He would lose any rights. Even Rav Avoh would agree to that. Right? That's why he didn't mention chitim and so'irim. Rather, Rab Abba only mentioned chitim b'chitim, because chitim b'so'er, even he would agree, is batal, and he loses his rights. If that's the case. So why then did he mention chitim and chitim? Why would that be any different? I understand chitim and chitim are the same type. That doesn't prevent bittul according to the Rechachamim. It is a sheet of Rabbi Yehuda that says that when it's the same min mixing in to each other, it's not batal. We don't have that contrast. We don't have the challenge to create the bittul. But according to Chacham, there's nothing to prevent bittul even when it's min b'mino. Chitin b'chitin nami. So even if it's a kav chitin of Reuven getting mixed into 10 kaven of chitin of Shimon, even there, nihid Rabbi Yehuda le batal. I understand according to Rabbi Yehuda, min b'she'eni min is not batal. He learns from a pasuk. We have the halacha by Yom Kippur where we mix the dama par and the dama soyer. We apply it to the mizbeach. Rabbi Yehuda brings a right from there that when two of the same type get mixed in, there's no bittul. Okay, so Rabbi Yehuda Shita, Chacham learned, it's because mitzvahs are not mevatel each other. I understand Rabbi Yehuda holds, min b'mina is not bittul. But l'rabbanon miftel bittul, contra rabbanon, even when it's min b'mina, there's nothing to hold back bittul from taking place. So, I understand why they laughed. Because you're using an analogy which was really self-contradictory. You're trying to make a point. But in your point, you indicated that even when it comes to ownership, there is an option of bittul. If it's min b'she'eni mina, if it's his chitim mixing with his se'erim, it's batul. And that's why you were careful to present it in a manner of chitim b'chitim, because that's min b'mina. And you held, well, that proves my point, that ownership is not batul. The difference between min b'she'eni mina and min b'mina, only holds true according to Rabbi Yehuda. According to Rabban, even it's min b'mina, it's really batal. So if you agree that even ownership can be batal if it's min b'shein b'mina, well, guess what? According to the Chacham, even if it's min b'mina, it's batal. So you didn't really make a point at all. You're trying to prove that ownership is not batal, but your own wording indicated otherwise. So you have to understand what the back and forth was. The Shittim of Kibetzes has a whole explanation to explain what Rabbi Abba was thinking. But in any case, this was Rabbi Oishia's response. And he pretty much was supporting the Chachamim, who questioned the Mishnah, who challenged the Halacha in the Mishnah, which says that a jointly owned dough is bound by both boundaries, both Tchumen. And they asked, what do you mean? This negligible ingredient, a little salt, a little water, is batal. Is overtaken by the dough, by the flour, which is the main ingredient, which belongs to Rachel. Amale Rav Safra. Rav Safra was backing Rav Abba. And he went and he challenged Rav Oishia. Moshe. This was a respectful term. Moshe. Shapeka Amris. You're like Moshe Rabbeinu in my eyes. You're the Talmud Chacham in this door. Fine, but Shapeka Amris? Is what you're saying true? Does it make sense? So you mean to say that Leah's ingredients can become bottle of Rachel's bread despite the fact that she owns those ingredients? Ownership can be bottle? Those Chachamim who ask us Kasha, that say it should be bottle and shouldn't be bound by the Tchum of Leah, rather it assumes the Tchum of Rachel. They didn't hear the Halacha presented by Rabbi Chiya Katusfa, Mishmei the Rav, the name of Rav, who said as follows. The Gemara is going to make an interesting comparison, and we'll try to bring out a point here that Leah's ingredients cannot be bottle in Rachel's loaf of bread because she retains ownership. She retains a claim to those ingredients. And therefore it's considered hers and bound by her tchum. What was the halacha? Haboyritz roiroiz megarnish al chaveri. A person picks out some pebbles from his friend's silo, his friend's pile of grain. Chayv l'shalom. He has to pay. You know how much? Chayv l'shalom le'dmei chitim. As though these pebbles were worth like chitim. As though he took out some wheat. So what's the background of this halacha? You see, when you have a silo, a granary, it's understood there's going to be some pebbles mixed in. And you can sell it in its entirety as though it's all completely grain. You don't have to reckon with the pebbles. It's understood. The customer knows. He's fully aware of the fact that inevitably there's going to be some grain, some pebbles in your grain. That's fine. And he pays for it as though it's chit. That's provided that it's there naturally. But if he removes the pebbles, too late. He can no longer put them back. Because now he's stealing. He's filling up his granary with pebbles. So if they're there originally, fine, you can leave them there and charge as though they're chitim. But if he removes the pebbles, then he cannot restore that. He can't put it back. So if Reuven goes over to the Gurn of Shimon and pulls out the pebbles, he caused them a loss. Now he can no longer charge for those pebbles as though they're grains, kernels of wheat. He's chayv l'shalom loyd mechitim. He has to pay back for those pebbles as though they're chitim. He caused them that loss. Now the Rashbam Bava Basra explains, this isn't just a grum. It's garmi. It's a more direct cause of loss. He did a masa. He removed the pebbles. By doing so, he brought about a loss. It's like destroying somebody's document, being soyrev shteroysev shechaveroi, burning his fellow's shtar chayv. What did I do? I didn't steal anything. I just stole your document. You did it through a masa, which that masa brought about a loss. It's called garmi and his chayv. It's different than grama, where it's just a causing something to happen. Here he did an actual masa, which brought about a loss. So this is the halacha in the name of Rav. If he's boyre tzroyreis, he's chayv to pay as though those pebbles were kernels of wheat. Oh, Alma, what do we see from here? Kilo chasrei. He diminished this measurement of kernels. We look at it as though he lost. He made him lose this much chitim. Even though you may argue and say, what do you mean? Pebbles are worthless. What do I do? The fact is, he brought about a loss. He was memait this much chitim. Hachanami kila chasri. Over here as well. You may argue and say, well, a little water, a little salt, a bottle to the dough. Right? So they don't have significance. They're negligible. They've been overtaken by that dough which belongs to Rachel. I should assume the tchum of Rachel. You're right. You have a good point there. But the fact is, Leah, the owner of that water and salt, has a claim on Rachel. You have to give me back the salt and water that he borrowed from me. She's going to have to pay her back what she borrowed. So of course she's not asking it back today. But tomorrow, the next day, she's going to have it back. So we apply this concept of kilo chasrei. It's just a borrowed term here. You've diminished this measure, which means there's a portion of this dough that belongs to Leah. It's committed to Leah. It's bound to Leah. Because she has to compensate her for those ingredients. So although the truth is that as far as the actual substance itself, you don't see it. It's part of the dough. It's been absorbed, incorporated, and embedded in the dough. So it should be bottle. And should assume the tchum of Rachel, the borrower. That's true. It's a good point. But since Leah still has a personal claim on Rachel, you have to pay me back for those ingredients. That personal claim gives chashivas, adds significance to those ingredients. You can't just say they're obsolete, they don't exist. When you look at them, they don't exist. Where are they? But since there's a personal claim on the borrower on account of these ingredients, which she borrowed and she has to return, that gives chashivas. That gives importance to those ingredients wherever they are. We have to reckon with them. Interesting svara. The personal claim, the personal commitment to return, to compensate for those ingredients, can't allow you to ignore the ingredients. They now have chashivas. And it can't be bottled. And that's why the Mishnah tells us that this Isa, this dough, is bound by both boundaries. The tchum of Rachel, the owner of the bread. Tchum of Leah, the owner of these ingredients. Amli Abai, Sabai responded. He held that the kasha was a good kasha on the Mishnah. It should be bottled. How? He says like this. The fact is, Leah has no interest in retrieving those ingredients today. She lent them today. Go ahead, gesunt ahead, use it for yamtiv. So as far as today is concerned, she has no claim. Her claim is sort of suspended until tomorrow, the next day, when she has a chance, she'll give it back to me. She'll repay me for those ingredients. But for the time being, her claim is rested. There's no active claim today. And as such, says Abaye, that should allow the ingredients to be bottled. It's the claim that's giving it chashivas. But there is no claim today. I understand she'll have to repair. I understand the actual ownership is not bottled. I'm not giving up those ingredients. You have to pay back. But for the time being, she's allowing Rachel to use it without returning it. So as far as Yontif is concerned, and as far as Shvisa of Yontif is concerned, as far as Tchum is concerned, right now, there is no claim on those ingredients. There's nothing to prevent it from assuming the tchum of Rachel, becoming bottled to her bread and acquiring the boundary of Rachel. Only Abai responds, V'leishanele lamar. Mar, master, meaning you don't differentiate between one case and the other. Be'mom and sheesh le'tovin, between money that has a claimant, such as the fellow who took the tsreiros out of the gurin. Well, he has a claim right there. Pay back your damage. L'mamash ain't l'tovin, as opposed to ingredients borrowed for her dough. She's not coming after her on Yom Tov. So today, for the time being, there's no claimant here. It's money without a claimant, without a tviya. And therefore, there's nothing holding it back from being bottled to my loaf of bread? So that was Abai's argument. There's a difference between when there's a claim, an active claim, or an inactive claim, such as in the case of the Mayim HaMelech mixed into the Issa, and therefore it should be bottled. And what's the Pshat in the Mishnah? Omale, so Rav Safra responded to Abaye. You're differentiating between one case and the other. I'll prove to you that there's no room for chiluk. Well, tameich, let's think about it. According to what you're saying, that depends whether or not there's a claim on this item. How are you going to understand the following halacha? A classic example of an iser which is batal beheter. Does it make a difference whether the iser is owned by somebody, I mean claimed by somebody, or not? Of course not. We never find anywhere in the Torah that iser can't be batal beheter if the iser belongs to somebody and he claims it. It doesn't work like that. So when it comes to bittul iser beheter, it's irrelevant of whether somebody's claiming it or not claiming it, whether it's owned or ownerless. Iser is batal beheter, period. Because iser can be batal beheter. We ignore ownership and claims. It's the iser element that it's going to be batal. And therefore, when it comes to iser, it's batal. But when it comes to our sugya, where the focal point is ba'alos, who does it belong to? As Tosfos explains for us so eloquently. Even though we have two elements, we have ba'alos and iser tchumen, but the iser tchumen is fully dependent. And a product of ownership. When we speak about ownership, ownership can't be batal. That's going to be the crux of his response. Amalei the tameich according to you. Ha, damar Rav Chisda. How do you explain Rav Chisda's halacha? So he's going to follow Shita's Rabbi Yehuda, which we briefly mentioned earlier, who holds that bittul only works when there are two different types, min b'she'ein and minay. But if it's the same type of thing, it's not batal. There isn't that contrast and that challenge, and one doesn't overtake the other. They both stay firmly in place. They're not affected by each other. That's Rabbi Yehuda's Shita. He's going to expound on that. Nevela betela b'shchut. You have a piece of a nevela, which is asur, falling into 10 pieces of kosher meat, shchut meat. We say the nevela is batal and becomes mutter. Why? Because they're two different types. Now, as Rashi points out, how do you determine whether it's the same or different? You focus on the roif, on the recipient of that iser. So the nevela that falls into shchuta, we focus on the shchuta. Is the shchuta similar to the iser? Is the recipient of the iser, in this case the shchuta, in any way similar to the nevela that fell into it? If it is, then it's called min b'minay, and it can't be batal. However, if there's no common denominator between the shchuta and the nevela, then we say it's min b'shein minay, and the nevela is batal b'roif. So nevela that falls into a shchuta, it's betela b'shchuta. It becomes mutter. Because if you focus on the shchuta, we see a clear difference between himself and the nevela. They have nothing in common. L'fi she'i hefshar l'shchuta she'da'asa nevela. It's impossible for the shchuta, which is basar kasher, to turn into iser, like the nevela. So that sets him apart from the nevela. It's called min b'shein minay. And the iser is batal beheter. However, if you have a shchuta that falls into nevela, shchuta ain't a betel b'nevela. We don't say that the one piece of shchuta that falls into the 10 pieces of nevela becomes like the nevela, and Rashi explains that if somebody touches the meat, it becomes tamei. You don't say that. Why? Because we focus on the recipient. In this case, it's the nevela, 10 pieces of nevela. And we say, well, can you become like the shchuta that fell onto you? Do you have something in common? No. L'fisha, oh, it is. In this case, it is. L'fisha efshar. L'nevela shati asa shchuta, because the nevela, which is now asa on tummy, can turn into a shchuta. What does this mean? It's just a way of saying that if the nevela spoils, it becomes inedible, unfit for achila, then it's mutter. So in a way, the nevela can sort of turn into a shchuta, can assume the status of shchuta, become heter. And when we focus on the nevela, which is the recipient of the item that fell into it, right, the shchuta fell into the nevela is the recipient. And if there's any way the nevela can find common ground with the shchuta, such as if it spoils, when it and then it becomes mutter, then the veil can become a shchuta in that way. And we treat them like they're same min, same type. Min b'mina, it's not batal. Okay, so that's the concept of bittul b'roiv, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Min b'mina is not batal. How do we focus, how do we determine, how do we categorize the status of these things? We focus on the roiv, and the question is whether it can turn into the miut. Okay. In any case, are you going to say that bittul of Isra Heta is totally depends on ownership? Hachinam, here's what you're going to say, Dichiis lebailam lebatla. Right, an avail is batal b'shchuta. Let's say an avail is owned by Reuven, and the shchuta is owned by Shimon. Is lebalam, it's not going to be batal because it's owned by somebody. And bal is ownership, financial interest can't be batal. Is that true? So only if it's ownerless, if it's hefker, it's batal. But if it's owned by somebody, it can't be batal because he has a claim on it. That's not true. Because if that were true, then even if it's hefker, he would have the same concern. Because even something which is really ownerless has chashivas as though it's owned. It has value. And if value prevents bittul, because this value can be bittul on the other value, can't lose its value by mixing it. If that's true, then even hefker wouldn't have bittul. Then you wouldn't have bittul anywhere in the Torah. So you might say, yeah, true. Issa can only be bittul if it's ownerless, if it's hefker. In which case it doesn't have value. Is that true? But it's not true. Vatanya. Listen to this brisa. It's actually a Mishnah, an Erev. Omer b'ich menuri, cheftze hefke kone shvise. We're now going to compare to an entirely different halacha, but we're going to draw a comparison. Take out an akuda, take out an element of that halacha and prove our point. We know that a person's possessions, his behema, his kalim, assume his own tchum. They're bound by the boundary of its owner, as we learned throughout the sugi. What about if it's hefke? Whose tchum does it get? According to Reich Menuri, even a cheftza hefker is kind of shvisa. So during Ben Hashmashos, it assumes a tchum of 2,000 either direction and must be kept within that boundary throughout Shabbos. What do you mean? It has no owner. How does it get a tchum? Afal bi she'en lehem balam, even though there is no balam owning this chefetz, doimin kimi she'esh lehem balam. We treat it as though there is an owner there involved in the picture. No, first I'm say because the chefetz of Hefker is slated to be picked up by somebody, is meant to serve somebody, as we see here, he picked it up. So it was meant for him. And therefore we treat it as though it has value, it has ownership, and is attributed to a person and to an owner, therefore it gets a tchum of an owner. And therefore it has tchum, which tchum? Its own tchum, its own 2,000 amma, which is determined based on its whereabouts, on its location in Ben Hashmashos. So you see that even a chefetz of Hefker is treated as something pertaining to a person, something which is meant to serve a person, something which has value. And therefore, it has a din of tchum. It seems from the Gemara that otherwise it wouldn't get tchum at all. Tchum is something which relates to usage, usage area of a person, but something which is not meant for usage, something not meant to serve somebody, it doesn't have the concept of tchum. In fact, Rabbi Yechon Menuri tells us the even chevetz of hefker acquires its own shvisa ben hashmashes, apparently because any item is attributed to a person. It's meant to serve somebody. It has value. It has inherent value because it's aimed to serve somebody, to connect to a baal. Okay, so having said that, any time an Isser falls into Heter, even if it's Hefker, you can't say it has no value. It doesn't relate to an owner. It does have inherent value and can't be bottled. Maybe Isser can be bottled, but value can't, according to your analogy. So this was a kasha back to Abaye. Abaye was the one who tells us that, look, Mammon could be bottled if it has no claim. Ingredients given by Leah to Rachel, which is not claiming it back today, could be bottled. because bittul is dependent upon claims. If you're claiming it, there's an act of claim, it can't be bittul. But otherwise, it can be bittul. Rav Safa came back and says, what do you mean? How can every isser be bittul beheter? Elamai, you'll tell me, because we're speaking about hefker. There's no claim on it. There's not value. What do you mean? But even hefker has value. Even hefker is treated as though it's owned by somebody, as we find in the case of cheftei hefker kain shvis. That being true, so how can any isser be bittul beheter? How can an avail be bittul b'shchuta? Oh, so you must say like this. As Tosis explains, you must say that these are two different topics. When we're discussing isser v'heter, nevel and shchuta, monetary value, claims, ownership is irrelevant. We're speaking about the isser v'heter element of this item. It's osur b'achila, it's mutar b'achila, that's all we care about. So whether it's owned, unowned, hefker, not hefker, it's always going to be bottle. As opposed to the concept of tchumen, which, as Tosis explains for us, is an ownership-related concept. One's possessions are bound by his boundary, are bound by his territory. His tchum applies itself to his items. Oh, it's not just a standalone iser like an avela, which is totally unrelated to ownership. Here, tchumen is an ownership-related concept. It's rooted in balas, and that can't be batel. Just because Leah gave her some ingredients doesn't mean she's relinquishing rights and claims to those ingredients. It's Leah's property, which were in her possession during Ben HaShemashes, and assumed her boundary, assumed her territory. You can't just disenfranchise her from her territory, from her ingredients. No. So that explains our Mishnah. Okay, so back to square one. So after this whole discussion, we now understand the Mishnah. Rachel borrowed some ingredients from Leah, which were in Leah's possession during Ben HaShemashes. This loaf of bread, which is really a joint entity, containing ingredients from both parties, is bound by both tchum. Ownership can't be bought. But Avaya wasn't left hanging. He responded. Omer Leah, he responds like this. Still, I believe it should be bought. You know why? Although tchumen is rooted in ownership, but it is iser. Let's focus on the iser aspect, on the boundary limitation, on the tchum restriction. Let's focus on that on its own. That's iser. Let's ignore the fact that it's rooted in ownership. It manifests itself in iser v'heter, and that can be batel. Irrelevant of ownership or claims. Amalei Abaye responds, Mikum Adamas Isur Lemamayna. How could you compare Isur to Mammon? Isur a bottle. If it's an Isur related concept, that could be bottle. Isur is bottle and heter. Her flour is heter. The water and salt is Isur, and that's bottle. It assumes the new tchum of the flour, of the rest of the dough. We focus on the Isur aspect, on the tchum restriction. Ignore the fact that it's rooted in ownership. It manifests itself in Isser, and that can be bottle. Like any other Isser is bottle beheter, irrelevant of ownership. Mamana lay bottle. I understand that Mammon can't be bottle. I understand. If Reuven's chitim fall into Shimon's chitim, it's not bottle. That's an ownership discussion. That's not bottle. But here by Tchumen, I understand it's rooted in balas and ownership, but it expresses itself in Isser. In restriction regarding Tchumen, that can be bottle. Oh, so back to the Kash. She borrowed some ingredients from Leah to make her dough. This dough is bound by both tchumen, Rachel and Leah. What do you mean? Leah's ingredients should be bottled into Rachel's bread and should assume Rachel's tchum. Rachel should no longer be restricted by Leah's boundary. Because it's Isra. So it seems that this was the focal point of the whole conversation, the whole sugya. Tchumen, is it Isra or is it Heter? It expresses itself in limitations and restrictions, but it's rooted in ownership. The tchum of one's possessions are bound by his boundary, his tchum. So it's an ownership factor here. So Abaye held No, let's ignore the ownership aspect. Let's focus on the Isra, and that could be Batal. Oh, so what's Pshat in the Mishnah? The time of might. Indeed, so why is Rachel bound by Leah's boundaries? So that's the way you write. Al Pidin, it should be Batal, and Rachel could take the loaf wherever she wants. So why not? Abaye Omar Gzeiro Shematas Isha B'Shutfus. Although in this case, certainly the miter ingredients, a Batal. But perhaps if we allow this loaf to be taken wherever, next time she might actually make a Isa B'Shutfus. They might partner in this loaf, in the flour and everything involved, in which case it's a 50-50 partnership, and of course in this case it's not Batal. So concern about that case. Rav Amar, I'll tell you why. Tavlin l'tama avidi. When we have something significant, such as seasoning, which give the whole dish its flavor, that can't be Batal. It's too significant to be Batal. Tavlin, seasoning in a dish. And as Hesus explains, the same thing regarding salt in the dough, or water, which is a main ingredient in making dough, that can't be Batal. That's a pivotal part of this concoction here. Tam l'tama avidi, it's meant to add flavor of a tam l'batal, and tam can't be batal. So typically, perhaps you would say a minor ingredient is batal in the broader entity, but not when it's something so important as flavoring, as water in a dough. Rav Ashi Amar, he has another pshat. Why can't the minor ingredients be batal in the dough? Keep in mind, this tchum restriction is limited to today. It's something which can be mutter tomorrow. Rabban, we say, don't take a chance. Why have it through bittul, which is like a suffix, right? You don't know where the iser is. You're going to have it and take a chance? No. If something can have heter after a while, wait patiently. Otherwise, it appears like you're taking yisurim lightly, taking chances. Chodova sheish lematir, and even if it's mixed to 1,000, I feel be'elef le'batal. And therefore, Rav Ashi explains, salt and water mixed into my loaf of bread, since that iser, that restriction, is a dova sheish lematir, wait until after Yom Tov and take it wherever you want, or have it today over here. There's an option of heter. Therefore, bittul doesn't apply. So according to Tanakama, water, salt, is not batul. Rabbi Yehuda Paita Bar Maim, he says, when it comes to water, you have to reckon with the owner of the water, it's batul. Because it's absorbed in the dough, it's non-existent. Maim in, this only applies to water, melech lay, but not to salt. Apparently, according to Rabbi Yehuda, salt is different than water. It doesn't dissolve, it doesn't get overtaken by the other ingredients. And its tchum has to be respected. What do you mean, Vatanya? We have a brayser. Rabbi Doimer, Maim Melech Betalin. Water and salt are batal. Be isa, be mekader, whether in a dough, whether in a dish being cooked. Like Kasha, the answer is depends what type of salt. Habe Melech Stoimus. Melech Stoimus was a finely ground salt which dissolves into the rest of the dough or the dish. So then it's batal. Habe Melech is Teruknis. The Mishnah which says that melach stands alone is speaking about coarser type of salt, mined salt, in which case it remains intact and it's not batal to the rest. Vatani, but we had a braisa which says, Rabbi Doimer, maim u'melach, betel b'issa, water and salt are batal to a dough, ve'im betel b'kadera, but not batal to food being cooked in a pot, ne'roitva, because there's some soup in there, there's some liquid material in the kadera, in which case, the water is still intact and not batal. Whereas in the Mishnah we learn that water mixed into a dish is also batal. Like Asha, the answer is it depends what type of a soup you're cooking. Haba ava, if it's a thicker consistency, in which case the water is no longer visible, it's absorbed into the soup, then it's batal. Haba raka, if it's a more liquidy material, in which case the water is still there and intact, it's not going to be batal. So conclusion, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if it's finely ground salt, it's always batal, non-existent. If it's coarse salt, it remains intact and has to be reckoned with. When it's water, if it's a thicker mixture, it's batal. If it's a more liquidy mixture, then you have to reckon with it. Okay, so what did we learn today? If one borrows a kli from Erev Yom Tov, even if he only took delivery on Yom Tov, it assumes his tchum. If he borrowed only on Yom Tov, even though he's a regular borrower, it assumes a tchum of the owner. What about those ingredients? Why aren't they batal to the broader entity, this dough, this bread being baked by the borrower? We have three terutzim. Gzera, that next time she might actually make a partnership, an equal partnership, in which case it won't be batal. Second shot is, these items, these ingredients are items of significance that add flavor, that make the dough, and they can't be batal. Koiner of Ashi, it's a davar sheyesh lamatir. We learned that koiner of Yehuda, sometimes water and salt are batal if they're rendered obsolete and non-existent. Kol tov to you, and much, much hatzlacha.